Welcome back to the Watt Charts podcast. I'm Hamza, and as usual, I am here with Charles. Hey, Charles, how's it going?
Hey, good.
Today, we are going to be talking about the Rolex Certified Pre-Owned Program. If you have been living under a rock and this is the first time you are hearing about it, Rolex has just announced an official Certified Pre-Owned Program. So in this episode, we will be diving into a bunch of questions that we have collected from readers and listeners on and viewers on YouTube and on Instagram, and we'll be running through several of those questions, asking some of our own, and then if we have time in the end, maybe go down a couple of tangents. So since that is the only topic, we thought we would just kind of kick it off there, but the right place, I think, to kick it off actually is with the facts. And so what I'd like to do here is just read out some of the facts from the press release from Rolex itself, because it's straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. So the full press release is available on their website. We'll include a link to it in the show notes, so you're welcome to check it out for yourself. But these are just some of the facts from that press release that I'm going to read out to help set the stage. So, quote, "The Rolex Certified Pre-Owned Program now enables retailers in the brand's official distribution network to sell secondhand models that are certified as authentic and which come with a new two-year international guarantee. Rolex Certified Pre-Owned watches will initially be available at Boucherer boutiques in 6 countries, Switzerland, Austria, Germany, France, Denmark, and the UK, from the start of December 2022. Other official Rolex retailers who choose to be part of this program will be able to do so from spring 2023. In concrete terms, the Rolex Certified Pre-Owned program attests the authenticity of secondhand Rolex watches that are at least 3 years old at their time of resale by an official retailer displaying the special Rolex Certified Pre-Owned plaque. Rolex watches, new or secondhand, should only be bought from official Rolex retailers who are authorized to sell and care for Rolex watches. Thanks to their skills and technical expertise, the retailers ensure the continued smooth functioning of each timepiece over the years. Only the official Rolex network is able to provide these guarantees." End quote. So I think that encapsulates a lot of the facts around what the program is and what we know about it. And of course, I think the general consensus at this point is that it has raised more questions than it has provided answers. And in fact, we had publicly said on IG and then also in a YouTube a video that we made about this announcement that we would be putting out a podcast. We would be recording it on Thursday and then putting it out on Friday. And we are recording this on Saturday because the original recording that we did, we decided we had to bin and start over just because of some additional analysis that we've been able to do. And hopefully this will be a bit more of a measured take and we can back it up with some additional facts and analysis. So yeah, that's why this episode is coming out a little later than we had publicly said initially a couple of days ago that we would be producing it. So apologies if you were desperate to get to listen to our take yesterday. That said, should we launch into our own quick impressions about this program? And this is not necessarily a section we're going to spend a ton of time on, but Charles, did you want to kick it off and share some quick observations that you've had?
Yeah, so I've been like sort of back and forth, like, you know, on the pendulum of how I feel about this as more information has become available and as I've been analyzing the market situation myself personally. So you know, hours after the release, I made a video for YouTube where I gave like a 5-minute rundown. And that was really like my just first impressions of the program. And I said it was positive. I said it's a, you know, step in the right direction and bringing legitimacy to the secondary market. And at that point, I didn't know what the pricing would be like. And I thought that Rolex could sort of go about it in two ways. Either they could set the market prices for CPO and say, this is what we believe that our used watches are worth, regardless of the current market situation, and, you know, attempt to stabilize prices. Or they could just go along with the market situation and add their, you know, whatever premium it is on top. Then the prices came out and my knee-jerk reaction was to say, wow, these prices are insane. They're much, much, much higher than market prices. And in certain cases, you know, now that we've done the analysis methodically, it is true, but it depends on your perspective. And I'll share a bit more about the nuance of that later. And that was sort of my mindset going into the original recording that we did, which is, you know, wow, Rolex prices, Rolex CPO prices are way, way, way above market. And that's what we've heard people in the community saying as well. I think the more measured take is that, yes, they are more expensive, but maybe not as much as I originally thought for a couple of reasons.
Given that Rolex did announce a certified pre-owned program, did you find yourself feeling as a consumer a particular way about the way in which they had done it, the way they had priced it? Did you wish that they hadn't priced it the way that they have, which seems to be a little bit above market? And we'll dig into the numbers later, but you know, did that they went this approach rather than trying to intentionally price it below retail prices for those references?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that say Rolex would have been absolutely insane to price stuff below retail on the secondary market, given what the prices are. And I mean, there's also like practical questions people are asking, you know, even if they wanted to do that, how could they possibly do so? Who would they be able to source the watches from, you know, at that price and still make a profit if they're buying stuff pre-owned, you know, presumably from consumers? But, and certainly, you know, like the situation for Rolex is relatively unprecedented, right? I think of two comparable markets that we can briefly talk about. The first is the car market, where certain used cars can sell above retail, even certified. But the thing is there that you also have dealers that are allowed to put their premium on top of the retail price, the MSRP, right? So you have a situation there where it's sort of like consistently above the MSRP, above retail, where both primary and secondary market can be above retail. And so so secondary certified pre-owned is going to be slightly cheaper than the new pieces, even though both are above retail. And I think that situation makes sense, but that's a little bit different than the watch market, because Rolex and other brands have, you know, basically put their foot down and say, you know, we're not allowed to list stuff. You're not allowed to sell stuff as an authorized dealer for above the retail price. The second comparable market is actually the market for pianos. And I have a little bit of experience in this market because I recently, earlier this year, purchased a Boston piano, which is sort of the lower end brand to Steinway, which is the biggest, most well-known, like the Rolex of pianos. You know, I'm sure that if anyone has, you know, watched a professional piano performance or, you know, an orchestra or something, almost invariably they perform on a Steinway piano. And, you know, pianos are also, in some sense, luxury products at this point for consumers, you know, for individual purchasers of grand pianos. Most of them are actually purchasing them as like furniture pieces or as, you know, like status symbol, like just something to show off in your house, right? That's at least what the Steinway dealers have told me. The vast majority of those consumers are that type of audience. And, you know, most people are actually not playing the Steinway pianos that they buy unless it's like an institution or something like that. But in the case of the piano market, there's also been a ton of demand. They told me they're sold out, like everything is reserved, sold out for the next year. And, you know, Steinway increases their market prices their retail prices by about 3% a year. And given the amount of demand, when I was going through that purchase earlier this year, I asked the salesperson, you know, would Steinway ever consider, you know, selling their used pianos above the market price, above the retail price? Because, you know, given the amount of demand, given that you guys are backed up a year, probably someone would pay it. And they said, no, that's never something we're going to do. You know, we raise the retail prices a little bit every year. We adjust the pre-owned prices accordingly. So, you know, there is some precedent for this in, albeit a much smaller market, but still from a brand that is like seen as, you know, that same level of prestige in that market as Rolex is to watches. So given all that, you know, I think it's possible that Rolex could have tried to say, let's stabilize prices, let's list stuff, let's sell used watches, maybe slightly below retail or something like that. And I think that they would have some capability in sourcing pieces at those prices because of just the scale of the business that Rolex does. And, you know, we have to keep in mind that the average Rolex consumer is not an enthusiast, is not someone who's a collector, who's super knowledgeable and super tuned in about pricing. I think that if Rolex wanted to, they could certainly just tell customers, you know, there is a trade-in program, and give them a price. And some set of that customers would just take the price that Rolex offers, no matter what it is, because they think this is a, you know, certified, this is an official way to do a trade-in. And it's smooth, it's easy. I don't have to deal with any third party. I'm paying for the convenience. I don't really care that I'm getting top dollar for my pieces.
As enthusiasts, I think we have this tendency to want to try and maximize value on every single purchase we make. So we're always after, you know, the best price that we can get at retail for something that we're trying to buy, or, you know, you want to haggle, or, you know, different people have different levels of sort of interest in that side of things. But people who are not enthusiasts and who are not having to consider purchases for multiple watches, which is, in fact, like you said, most of the people who are going to buy watches from Rolex, are buying them through ADs in the first place, because that's where you buy them. And so you build up a relationship with these people. And then, you know, this isn't yet another way for you to kind of keep, you know, rotating traffic through the door, because you come back and you sell something to them. And then maybe they, and then that's, and that's another part of the thing that I think there's a question later on where we'll talk about the trade-in program. But, you know, you bring back something old and then you buy something new, and you don't really want to have to think about dealing with anyone except for your AD and your sales rep at that AD if you're only thinking about watches for like 2 hours a year when you go into the store to see if you're interested in replacing what's already on your wrist, right? And so for those sorts of people to not have to worry about, you know, diving into the forums or looking at secondary market prices where maybe they don't have a relationship because they're not crazy enthusiasts and collectors, and, you know, they don't have friends who are like that, then yeah, this is a very convenient option that, because it has the sheen of something official, becomes a very attractive option for people who don't really care about, you know, whether or not they're eking out the very last dollar of value from their transactions.
Right. And we also have to think about, you know, like, what is the value proposition here and who is that value proposition targeting, right? There's a lot of details of the program that we don't know. We don't know if Rolex is actually servicing, you know, every single watch that they're selling CPO. Like, we don't know what the turnaround process looks like, whether they're doing a full service, whether they're doing just some basic testing. We don't know even if Rolex is servicing the watches themselves or if they're relying on the authorized dealers to do that. Obviously, Boucher, you know, already had a pre-owned program before they became the first Rolex CPO dealer. And, you know, it's like, how much value add is there really from a practical perspective of Rolex CPO? I think of, you know, again, comparing to the car market, the car industry, you know, CPO, there's a slight premium in generally. I see some metrics thrown around, something like 3-6% premium for CPO cars compared to just standard used cars. And obviously that premium is going to be different if you're buying a very, very reliable car, a Camry, a Toyota Camry, you know, those are the classic examples. Then CPO is probably not worth that much because it's a very reliable car to begin with and the servicing is cheap. If you're buying a Mercedes or a BMW or, you know, a Porsche, you know, there's potentially more things that can go wrong. And when they do go wrong, they are a lot more expensive. So in that case, you know, that CPO warranty, that guarantee is worth more, right? And so maybe CPO, those CPO brands, those CPO cars are going to be priced higher, right? I think that in the watch world, Rolex is really bulletproof in terms of its reputation for quality and consistency. I think they do it, you know, at the scale that they do it at, better, way better than any other brand. I think that it's questionable, like, you know, how much practical true value are you getting when you purchase Rolex CPO? And, you know, that gets into the meat of the question. Okay, well, given that amount of value, is CPO worth it compared to the premium that it is, that it costs on the market? And so we ran the numbers yesterday, and it depends, as I said, on how you want to look at it. And if you compare it to like private party pricing, particularly like in America, you know, where a lot of our audience is, where we are ourselves, the prices are, you know, in some cases extremely, you know, astronomical. As I said, like that was my sort of knee-jerk reaction. For example, there's a Rolex Batman 116710 BLNR listed on their the Bucher site for 21,000 Swiss francs, which is about 22,500 US dollars. We've seen private sales listings for that watch as cheap as like $14,500, right? But obviously the markup is a little bit different for each model, for each collection. And so we actually built a tool to track the pricing difference between the market price and the Rolex CPO price. And, you know, if you were to look at it from a private sales perspective, globally, you know, Rolex CPO is about like 27% more expensive across the board is what we're saying. But that isn't necessarily the fairest comparison because, again, if you think about who Rolex CPO is made for, it's unlikely that those people are cross-shopping private sales, right? So when you think about the comparable entities that, you know, someone who's interested in a Rolex CPO might otherwise buy from, well, right now, they're definitely buying from someone in Europe because the CPO program is only available in 6 European countries. And they're probably also going to be looking to buy from a reputable dealer in Europe, just not one that's Rolex certified. So if you look at that set of numbers, then we know that European prices are more expensive. Europe is generally the most expensive major market after North America, which is also more expensive than Asia. And obviously, on average, dealer prices are going to be higher than private party prices. So looking at it that way, and that's what our Rolex tracker on our website is now looking at, is actually giving the number for. It's about a 16% premium as of today for Rolex CPO prices of those 300-something listings on the Bucher site compared to the European dealer price.
As computed by what charts?
Right, as computed by, you know, our market data, because we can break it down, you know, based on a variety of different factors, and it's assuming pre-owned condition with box and papers sold from a dealer in Europe.
Yeah, so the bottom line is that it's not that Rolex CPO is not more expensive. It's that if you do an apples-to-apples comparison to what a customer who is likely to buy from Rolex CPO would have had to pay before versus what they're having to pay now, the Rolex CPO is 16% more expensive.
Right, and that's on average. You know, the thing with I don't know why they decided to do it like this, but they launched the program, you know, those 300-something watches that I talked about, the vast majority of them are like date justs and day dates. And, you know, by production numbers, I don't know, that is probably the most watches that they make. But obviously, you know, the watches that are in the minds of collectors, of enthusiasts, are not really those types of watches as much as they are Daytonas, Submariners, GMT Masters. And again, you know, maybe this is going back to the type of customer, the type of audience, you know, that Rolex is targeting the CPO for. It's for people that are going to be buying these ladies' datejusts, these men's datejusts, these day dates, whatever. But in general, we also noticed that the premium for the sports models, the premiums for the professional models are higher. So there's 2 Daytona listings. Those are on average 25% more expensive than the European dealer price. There's 20 Submariner listings. Those are 18% more expensive on average. And then there's 6 GMT Master listings, which are 20% more expensive. And again, the overall average was 16%. So those are all above average in terms of the markup that Rolex is asking. So certainly they recognize the demand for these watches. Certainly they recognize that, you know, those are the watches that people are going to want the most. And they're charging an appropriate, or I don't know if you want to call it an appropriate, but they're charging a premium for it, which seems as expected given the market condition.
Right. I would also just reiterate that this is just based on 300 odd listings from Bucher's website. This is, of course, you know, today is day 2 or day 3 of the program being live. We expect additional retailers to join the program in the spring of 2023. The program is hopefully going to expand outside Europe. And so as more and more of that inventory comes online and, you know, we get variability in terms of regions, we expect to see some change from you know, the prices that just Boucher is offering. We may see, we will hopefully see more references in the more in demand or more hyped, categories for enthusiasts, and then see if there's, you know, an interesting trend there to talk about on the price. But I think we've kind of dug into the numbers enough at this point that we've set the stage to maybe talk about some of the questions that we collected from you, from you on Instagram, you dear listeners, readers, followers, and on YouTube. So we'll go through these questions and we'll kind of answer them as our way of kind of digging into the program a little bit more. So the first one, Charles, is, do you think they will stabilize the secondary market? And this comes from a user on Instagram, omickey_travels. Do you think they will stabilize the secondary market?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, right? Like, it depends on how you want to define stabilize. Stabilize in the sense that they set a market price that is, or they set a CPO price that is, you know, independent of the market price. And they say, you know, we believe this is the price for the watches. You know, it only really makes sense if you were to list, if you were to charge below retail, right? It's like Rolex has set a retail price. They say that no authorized dealer is allowed to sell the watch for higher than the retail price. So, you know, that price is based on their cost of production. That price is based on the intrinsic value, or as close as we can get to the intrinsic value of the watch itself, based on the materials, based on the R&D, based on the manufacturing, as I said. And, you know, it's like they should be, if they wanted to do it that way, then they should be consistent with that, right? And they would say, okay, well, we value the new watch at this much, and we value the pre-owned watch at slightly less than that much due to wear and tear, right? So, you know, you can think of it that way in terms of stabilizing the secondary market. Certainly, if they did do that, then there would be a lot of pressure, depending on the extent of the program, how widespread it is, there could be a lot of pressure on other secondary market dealers to respond to the pricing. And I think overall it would bring stability. Rolex has not done that. Does that mean they're not stabilizing the secondary market? I think it remains to be seen. Right now they're listing stuff, you know, a decent amount above the market price in a market downturn. I think we need to look at it from a longer term perspective. Like, you know, if we see another insane market bubble, or if we see prices continue to drop, how will Rolex respond to pricing?
We don't know how often they're going to be updating prices, for example.
Right.
But for me, the interesting question that this brings up, or the interesting point that this brings up, is that Rolex has essentially created a new product category. So previously you could buy new watches or pre-owned watches, and now you can buy new watches from an AD, as before, pre-owned watches from a dealer, from your friend, from eBay, you know, from a forum, whatever. And now you can buy this third new thing, which is Rolex certified pre-owned. And that's got its own sort of pricing level. And so how often do they update those prices? How attached do they remain in the long term to market prices or not? Like, these are all questions to which I think we will only find the answers with time. How much do customers value paying that premium? And does, you know, Rolex have to over time adjust the premium because they find people are not willing to pay an additional 15%? That's the sort of thing that it brings up to me. I think in the long term, a stabilizing effect might be if Rolex can back up ADs to be able to hold on to inventory for longer in downturns, for example. That's an unknown. If Rolex would help out with ADs, if, let's say, you know, if this program had been live 6 months ago and all of a sudden prices started cratering, would Rolex have backstopped ADs and said, okay, like, we recognize, like, this is maybe causing a liquidity crunch for you because you can't move inventory, but you're not going to cut prices and we'll make up for it some other way for you financially? Like, just unclear.
Right. The next question is from the Refinery Co. on IG. Where are they going to get inventory from? And I touched on this a little bit, but my guess is that they're going to be buying the inventory from people who walk into Rolex boutiques and Rolex, I guess they don't technically have boutiques, but Rolex authorized dealers. And again, you know, I think most, maybe not most, but a lot of these people are not enthusiasts. They're not collectors. They think of a watch as like a car. It's just, it's some part of their everyday set of things that they use. They might get a new watch once every 5 to 10 years, and they buy a Rolex because that's the only watch brand, luxury watch brand that they know and that they have any respect for. And they're just, you know, it's not, watches are not a priority in their life. And they go into their AD and they say, you know, I want a new Rolex. And assuming they have one available, you know, they say, okay, great. Like, you know, can I trade in my old one, or would you like to trade in your old one? And they are given a trade-in value. There's not really an explanation on how this value was derived or whether it is consistent with the market. But, you know, this person is not really paying attention to that. They're not trying to maximize, as we said, you know, every dollar. They just want the convenience. They don't want to deal with a third party. And so they accept the trade-in value for whatever it is. And Rolex takes that watch and lists it as CPO, or rather the AD.
Yeah. Selling pre-owned Rolex as a business is not new to Boucherer. They've been doing it, and doing it for other brands as well, for a while. The only thing that they've done now is added the certified sort of word to the pre-owned thing, right? And it had Rolex's name on it. So like a lot of these ADs that are likely to be stocking Rolex CPO likely already have large functioning pre-owned businesses that they already have some mechanism by which they are generating inventory for.
Right. That's definitely going to be like, I think, because the program is going to roll out relatively slowly. And, you know, right now there's also this question of like, how much impact will it have on prices? And we'll get more into that, but it all depends on like the extent of CPO inventories that's actually out there. Right now it's 400 listings in the world, as far as we know, because that's what's public on the Boucherer CPO site. Like, that's a drop in the bucket. It's not going to make any meaningful difference on prices, especially when the vast majority of those are like date just, ladies pieces, day dates, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the next question. This is also from Instagram, from somebody called tacky.be. How far back in time will they dare to venture? And will they continue to refurbish, delete beautiful patina?
My impression is that this is a program for modern watches. It's a program for watches between 3 and 15, 20 years old, maybe. So watches after the 2000s. Again, we don't know how exactly the program is run. We don't know how much responsibility, what is the extent of Rolex's involvement. But it seems to me that the dealers that would first start doing CPO are the ones that, like Hamza said, already have some sort of pre-owned business and can basically white label part of that business to be under Rolex CPO. And so those people are probably not, you know, the experts in how to take care of, service a vintage watch in the way that, you know, enthusiasts want them to.
So the personal anecdote that I can offer on this is my experience taking a Rolex Datejust from 1986 in for service at a Rolex service center. And what I was told is it is considered a vintage piece because it is more than, I believe it was already more than 30 years old at that point when I took it in for service. And so it has to go back to Switzerland and they'll take care of it over there. And, you know, our service center isn't sort of equipped or certified or permitted or rated for working on this watch, even though it's just like, you know, a run-of-the-mill Datejust. But my guess is that if Rolex doesn't allow its service centers to touch watches that are older than, let's say, 25 to 30 years old, and I'm not sure exactly what that cutoff is, and then these are the same people who have to clean and inspect and certify these CPO watches, that they would just use the same workflow and not allow watches older than whatever that cutoff is to be eligible for this program. So it could be 20, 25, 30. I'm not sure exactly what that cutoff is, but from a practical standpoint, I think just the people who are going to have to be doing the CPO intake and actually producing inventory, that process is not going to look any different from what was already in place.
I think they're unlikely to invest much in terms of vintage or neo-vintage into the program. I mean, you know, traditionally the idea of CPO is like lightly used, like well, you know, well-maintained, like in good condition pieces that are just sort of given a seal of approval by the brand, right? Most car CPO programs by car manufacturers have some limit. I think it's like 4 years or something where, you know, the car must be less than 4 years old to be sold as CPO. I don't think that Rolex and its authorized dealers want to invest a ton in like the vintage, neo-vintage side as well, because like, again, I don't think that that's who they're making the program for. They're making it for people who just want to trade in a watch every couple years and who don't want to, you know, those are not enthusiasts. Those are not collectors that want to deal with vintage. And it's just going to be difficult to have those watches like sitting in Rolex storefronts and, you know, however much, I don't know what they're going to price them at if they do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, those watches, they don't even take in a CPO. The next question is from Landon Nuris on IG. We have some from YouTube as well. We should probably switch a bit between them. But he asks, will it be possible to purchase online? Right now it's no. And yeah, I think also probably unlikely for the foreseeable future that they will allow you to purchase online. Again, I think this is all about the in-store experience, creating a seamless, you know, transition from an old watch to a new watch. And probably, you know, Rolex would have to change their position on that significantly on the retail side as well before they make it possible to purchase CPO online.
Okay, next question. What's the impact going to be on pre-owned prices? This comes from BDK22 on IG.
Yeah, so this is a little bit similar to the question about will they stabilize the secondary market. The impact on pre-owned prices, I think, is right now is probably not much, if any, because, again, it's only 400 watches. It's only less than 50 combined, like Submariners, GMT Masters, Daytonas. That is the, you know, bulk of the Rolex pre-owned market. Datejusts are big as well, but like, you know, the men's, you know, 41 millimeter Datejusts, they have a lot of ladies pieces in the CPO catalog.
To put the 400 number, and it's actually not even 400, it's 300 something listings on Boucher. To put that number in perspective, if you go to Watch Charts and check on the watches for sale tab, the number of active listings from the last year that you can buy today, from forums, there are 15,000 listings for Rolex watches. eBay has 57,000 listings. Rakuten has 43,000 listings. Carousel has 36,000 listings. So 400 watches, sure, it's straight out of the gate, but right now it's not even a drop in the bucket. It's a droplet, or I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, plus you have like, you know, all these other big marketplaces, you have auctions.
Exactly.
Yeah, like it depends on how they're going to be able to scale out the program. And as I said, I think, you know, they're relying on their authorized dealers that are already doing CPO. There's about 1,800, I think, Rolex 80s across the world, about 300 in the U.S. How many of those are doing pre-owned already and have a like basically an established pre-owned business that they can just white label? It's probably a small percentage of those. I think if the Rolex CPO program can start, you know, selling like tens of thousands or maybe even like 50,000 watches a year, then yeah, that'll definitely have a impact on the pre-owned pricing. But, you know, it's, again, they're selling the watches for a decent markup above the market price. So I think it's going to support prices rather than help bring prices down. And it might even, if the program is extensive enough, you know, again, because like we said, you know, there's not, I think personally, there's not that much value add from a practical standpoint in terms of the level of guarantee that you are offering, that you are being offered compared to like a Watch Box or, you know, Crown and Caliber or another very, very reputable online dealer, then, you know, likely it's just Rolex is going to set that pricing and it could even push those prices higher because, you know, those dealers will say, I'm offering the exact same experience, but at a, you know, 15, 16, whatever, 20% discount. Next question. Interesting that the watchmakers which work for Rolex are now checking pre-owned watches instead of producing new models. This comes from Mark on YouTube. And I think this is a question of, like, is Rolex doing any of servicing of the watches themselves? And again, we've touched on this. My personal opinion is probably not. As I said, they're going to be relying on their ADs that are doing pre-owned. I don't know if it's going to be like a service center type of thing where it's like, okay, the non-Rolex service center is allowed to service a certain type of CPO watch, and then certain other ones need to go back to the factory. But again, given what CPO has traditionally meant, I would guess that Rolex probably doesn't even want to deal with that. They just want to take, you know, very, very nice condition watches that they have to do minimal work for and just sell them as CPO. And then the other question, I think the other concern from the enthusiast, from the community perspective, was that, you know, Rolex has said publicly that they don't want to try to constrain demand. And if they were to allocate watchmakers of their own to the CPO program, then that would be potentially limiting the number of watchmakers that can actually produce new Rolex watches.
Yeah, I imagine that they would say for any ADs that are running their own Rolex service centers that if you're already backlogged on your service requests for watches that, you know, your customers have brought back in for service, that you need to hire more watchmakers and build up a capacity to actually manage the additional inventory that you have to, you know, certify, so to speak. Like, that's, I think, the real opportunity cost for any AD that's considering signing up for this program. The wait times for their customers who have sent their watches in for service or repair or any of, you know, that sort of thing that results in their watch landing in the service center. Now that watchmaker is going to be pulled away from working on that watch that needs service, as opposed to being, you know, kind of occupied with repairing and servicing and authenticating certified pre-owned inventory. So that's maybe where we'll see an impact. But that, again, like at this point, I feel like this is the extent to which I'm comfortable speculating, because it starts feeling like you're going out too far out on a limb.
Well, there's no, like, I think there's no like mandate from Rolex, right? It seems like it's an opt-in program. That's what they're telling authorized dealers. It's like, if you want to participate in CPO, you know, you're allowed to do that starting from next year, but there's no obligation, right? And probably, you know, at least in the beginning, the dealers, the CPO dealers will have, I think, a high amount of flexibility in how much inventory they want to take in and sell as CPO. And, you know, also from a business standpoint, like, yeah, like how big of a part of their business they want that to be compared to, you know, making money from servicing or, you know, just like depending on the margins that the CPO business has. You know, obviously, traditionally speaking, the used business is much lower margin, much tighter than selling new product. From, you know, at taking it in at wholesale prices and selling it at retail prices. But I don't know, you know, maybe with Rolex's specific clientele and their ability to command, you know, whatever price they want for trade-in, then maybe actually this can become quite lucrative for them. Will it be more or less difficult to get your desired watch? Asks Moritz Kohler on YouTube. And this leads me to a tangent about Rolex CPO being another opportunity for games from authorized dealers. We did a video a couple weeks ago, which was taken from, I think it was taken from the podcast, where we talked about, you know, this type of behavior by authorized dealers of doing like certain things like bundling or, you know, like all this stuff around building a relationship, right? That's what everyone says. That's the nice way of saying it. And so how do you build a relationship? People suggest, you know, you bring your authorized dealers some gifts, or, you know, you check in all the time and show them that you're present and that you're, you know, part of the, you know, local watch scene or whatever. And of course, the most, you know, clear cut way is you buy a lot of product from them, some of which is not the most desirable, the easiest stuff for them to sell. You're doing them a favor, right? So to me, like, Rolex CPO is opening up another opportunity to build a relationship. It's like, hey, if you want to buy that new Daytona at retail, yes, I can give you an allocation. Just trade in to me your old Daytona at a price that is significantly below the market price, below what you might be able to get if you were to sell that watch privately or to another non-certified dealer, right? And it's like, basically, let me offset some of the revenue that I would have made from you by bundling or something else with the additional money I'm going to make by taking in your watch at an extremely below market value and then selling it at a market value, right? So there's this new way now that they might be able to find ways to, you know, squeeze more profit out of the sale of a new Rolex watch at the retail price. In that sense, will it be more or less difficult to get your desired watch? Maybe if you have a lot of desirable watches to trade in from before that you got at reasonable prices, then it'll make it easier for you. But if you're just someone who's coming in with no purchase history, well, it seems like this is another type of person that you have to compete with potentially. Now, I don't know if 80s are going to be doing this, you know, at all, but like if I think, you know, if based on, obviously based on, you know, capitalism and based on how the economy works and how people, you know, are obviously trying to maximize profit and based on the past behaviors of 80s, you know, with bundling and all this stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if this happens.
For me, it comes back to what is your desired watch? And we've kind of discussed this question in some depth that if what you like is hyped, then at some point you just have to decide if you have to suck it up and, you know, put up or shut up kind of, or you just move on to desiring something else. None of these things, like watches don't matter, right? Like if you like something and it was previously difficult to get, the arrival of this program is unlikely to make it any easier or any harder in the short term for you to be able to get that watch.
Well, I think it could make it harder because there's another source of competition. You're not just competing with the big spenders at retail, you're also competing with the big trading inners, you know?
sure. But those are dynamics that will sort of come into view once more inventory is available and we start seeing people participate in the program, right? I think beyond that, it's too early to tell. The next question that we should tackle is back from IG again. This is from Pat Gons. How will they price the pre-owned watches? Do you think Charles Rolex has any say on how these things get priced?
Just given, like, you know, the way they've talked about the program and like the what makes sense, I think, from an economic perspective, like, as I said, I think it's just like a white labeling type of thing. They're allowing the dealers, the pre-owned dealers, to run their existing pre-owned business just with a Rolex name on top. I would be surprised. Like, obviously, the market prices, as we said, the CPO prices, they are higher than the market prices. Does Rolex have any say on that? I would guess probably not. I can imagine if prices are lower and maybe like below retail and authorized dealers are struggling with the CPO program to make money, then, you know, maybe Rolex would offer some incentives to support the CPO program. But, you know, that's a completely different world than where we are now. I don't think that Rolex is going to put any upper bound on the price that a CPO dealer can ask. And so they're probably just going to continue to price them like they always have, just with a slight premium. And, you know, I think also, at least with Bucherer, you know, if you look at their like non-Rolex CPO inventory, a lot of it is also still like much more expensive than the market price. And, you know, maybe this is just like the premium that is commanded by like supposedly one of the most reputable, one of the most trustworthy pre-owned dealers. So I also don't know like how, to what extent Rolex follows the market and whether they want to, you know, really dictate pricing on a regional level and say, here's what you're allowed to ask. Again, the program is so new and like, I think they're just leveraging the existing 80s that are doing pre-owned that they're probably just going to give them the leeway to operate it to the extent that they want, right? Also, as I said, I don't think they're going to put any like requirements on, oh, you must carry this much CPO inventory. It seems like it's a completely opt-in program. So I think, you know, to wrap up the episode, we can talk about the future of CPO and trade-in programs and what they might mean for the industry 5 to 10 years from now, right? I mean, I think that this is still long-term, probably a step in the right direction in bringing mainstream appeal to watches. I think that similar to cars, people will expect a seamless way to go from an old watch to a new watch. And I think one of the big questions, one of the big things that I hope will be implemented in this time frame, is the ability for a authorized dealer or a certified pre-owned dealer to just take in any watch for trade-in and be able to offer a value on it. So not just a watch from the same brand. To me, that would like really be a game changer, because it means that, you know, it's not, again, it's not just for enthusiasts. I have some, you know, old watch that I acquired, and maybe it's like a Tudor or like a Longines or an IWC or something, and I can trade it in for a Breguet or a Rolex or a Longa even, right? Like, you can do that right now through the biggest pre-owned dealers, like Watchbox, you know, Crown & Caliber, certain dealers, there's just a few of them, will probably accept just about any watch for trade-in and give you some price for it, you know, depending on how in demand it is and how easily they think they can sell it. But this is, you have to go through a third party, right? So I think that if this type of program can become prevalent for, you know, all the major brands, all the major groups, and I don't think it's super unfeasible, because, you know, most brands are owned by conglomerates, right? If you can get Richemont, if you can get Swatch, if LVMH on board, and then you get Rolex, Patek, and AP on board, which they obviously, I think, want to be on board because of the money that there is to be made in that sort of program, given the state of, you know, the market for their watches, then it's not impossible. But it doesn't seem like Rolex, at least in this latest announcement, seems like they're moving in this direction, because they basically made explicit statements about the illegitimacy of the secondary market and the legitimacy, right, only through their certified pre-owned program. So it doesn't sound like they're saying used watches are legit, we want to support that by doing CPO. They're saying used watches are not legit, don't trust it except for from us. So I don't know, maybe this is just wishful thinking, and of course, you know, 5 to 10 years is a long time, but to me that would be a state of maturity that would really make a difference in the experience for your average type of consumer.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, Charles, and listeners, for making it this far. You can check us out on the web at watchcharts.com, IG at watchcharts on YouTube, where we're trying to get more rigorous about posting new and interesting content more regularly. And we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care.